Chapter 39. She loosened her furs and settled herself in Jerdy's easy chair, while her friend busied herself with the teacups. But what can they do, the Miss Silvertons? How do they mean to support themselves? She asked, conscious that the note of irritation still persisted in her voice. It was the very last topic as he had meant to discuss. It really did not interest her in the least, but she was seized by a sudden perverse curiosity to know how the two colorless shrinking victims of young Silverton's sentimental experiments meant to cope with the grim necessity which lurked so close to her own threshold. I don't know, I am trying to find something for them. Miss Jane reads aloud very nicely, but it's so hard to find anyone who is willing to be read to. And Miss Annie paints a little, oh, I know, apple blossoms on blotting paper. Just the kind of thing I shall be doing myself before long, exclaimed Lily, starting up with a vehemence of movement that threatened destruction to Miss Farish's fragile tea table. Lily bent over to steady the cups, then she sank back into her seat. I'd forgotten there was no room to dash about in. How beautifully one does have to behave in a small flat. Oh, Jerdy, I wasn't meant to be good, she sighed out incoherently. Jerdy lifted an apprehensive look to her pale face, in which the eyes shone with a peculiar sleepless luster. You look horribly tired, Lily. Take your tea, and let me give you this cushion to lean against. Miss Bart accepted the cup of tea, but put back the cushion with an impatient hand. Don't give me that. I don't want to lean back. I shall go to sleep if I do. Well, why not, dear? I'll be as quiet as a mouse, Jerdy urged affectionately. No, no. Don't be quiet. Talk to me. Keep me awake. I don't sleep at night, and in the afternoon a dreadful drowsiness creeps over me. You don't sleep at night? Since when? I don't know, I can't remember. She rose and put the empty cup on the tea tray. Another, and stronger, please. If I don't keep awake now, I shall see horrors tonight, perfect horrors. But they'll be worse if you drink too much tea. No, no, give it to me, and don't preach, please, Lily returned imperiously. Her voice had a dangerous edge, and Jerdy noticed that her hand shook as she held it out to receive the second cup. But you look so tired. I'm sure you must be ill, Miss Bart set down her cup with a start. Do I look ill? Does my face show it? She rose and walked quickly toward the little mirror above the writing table. What a horrid looking glass, it's all blotched and discolored. Anyone would look ghastly in it. She turned back, fixing her plaintive eyes on Jerdy. Why, you stupid dear, why do you say such odious things to me? It's enough to make one ill to be told one looks so. And looking ill means looking ugly. She caught Jerdy's wrists and drew her close to the window. After all, I'd rather know the truth. Look me straight in the face, Jerdy, and tell me. Am I perfectly frightful? You're perfectly beautiful now, Lily. Your eyes are shining, and your cheeks have grown so pink all of a sudden. Ah, they were pale, then ghastly pale, when I came in. Why don't you tell me frankly that I'm a wreck? My eyes are bright now, because I'm so nervous, but in the mornings they look like lead. And I can see the lines coming in my face, the lines of worry and disappointment and failure. Every sleepless night leaves a new one, and how can I sleep when I have such dreadful things to think about? Dreadful things, what things? Asked Jerdy, gently detaching her wrists from her friend's feverish fingers. What things? Well, poverty, for one, and I don't know any that's more dreadful. Lily turned away and sank with sudden weariness into the easy chair near the tea table. Why, you asked me just now if I could understand why Ned Silverton spent so much money. Of course I understand he spends it on living with the rich. You think we live on the rich rather than with them. And so we do, in a sense, but it's a PRIVIP 279 greater than liege we have to pay for. We eat their dinners, and drink their wine, and smoke their cigarettes, and use their carriages and their opera boxes and their private cars, yes, but there's a tax to pay on every one of those luxuries. The man pays it by big tips to the servants, by playing cards beyond his means, by flowers and presents and lots of other things that cost. The girl pays it by tips and cards too. Oh, yes, I've had to take up bridge again, and by going to the best dressmakers, and having just the right dress for every occasion, and always keeping herself fresh, and exquisite and amusing. She leaned back for a moment, closing her eyes, and as she sat there, her pale lips slightly parted, and the lids dropped above her fagged brilliant gaze. Jordy had a startled perception of the change in her face, of the way in which Anish and daylight seemed suddenly to extinguish its artificial brightness. She looked up, and the vision vanished. It doesn't sound very amusing, does it? And it isn't. I'm sick to death of it. And yet the thought of giving it all up nearly kills me. It's what keeps me awake at night, and makes me so crazy for your strong tea. For I can't go on in this way much longer. You know I'm nearly at the end of my tether. And then what can I do? How on earth am I to keep myself alive? I see myself reduced to the fate of that poor Silverton woman, slinking about to employment agencies, and trying to sell painted blotting pads to women's exchanges. And there are thousands and thousands of women trying to do the same thing already, and not one of the number who has less idea how to earn a dollar than I have. She rose again with a hurried glance at the clock. It's late, and I must be off. I have an appointment with Carrie Fisher. Don't look so worried, you dear thing. Don't think too much about the nonsense I've been talking. She was before the mirror again, adjusting her hair with a light hand, drawing down her veil, and giving a dexterous touch to her furs. Oh, of course, you know, it hasn't come to the employment agencies and the painted blotting pads yet, but I'm rather hard up just for the moment, and if I could find something to do, notes to write, and visiting lists to make up, or that kind of thing, it would tide me over till the legacy is paid. And Carrie has promised to find somebody who wants a kind of social secretary. You know she makes a specialty of the helpless rich. Miss Bart had not revealed to Jordy the full extent of her anxiety. She was in fact in urgent and immediate need of money. Money to meet the vulgar weekly claims which could neither be deferred nor evaded. To give up her apartment, and shrink to the obscurity of a boarding house, or the provisional hospitality of a bed in Jordy Farish's sitting room, was an expedient which could only postpone the problem confronting her, and it seemed wiser as well as more agreeable to remain where she was, and find some means of earning her living. The possibility of having to do this was one which she had never before seriously considered, and the discovery that, as a breadwinner, she was likely to prove as helpless and ineffectual as poor Miss Silverton, was a severe shock to her self-confidence. Having been accustomed to take herself at the popular valuation, as a person of energy and resource, naturally fitted to dominate any situation in which she found herself, she vaguely imagined that such gifts would be of value to seekers after social guidance. But there was unfortunately no specific head under which the art of saying and doing the right thing could be offered in the market, and even Mrs. Fisher's resourcefulness failed before the difficulty of discovering a workable vein in the vague wealth of Lily's graces. Mrs. Fisher was full of indirect expedients for enabling her friends to earn a living, and could conscientiously assert that she had put several opportunities of this kind before Lily. But more legitimate methods of breadwinning were as much out of her line as they were beyond the capacity of the sufferers she was generally called upon to assist. Lily's failure to profit by the chances already afforded her might, moreover, have justified the abandonment of farther effort on her behalf. But Mrs. Fisher's inexhaustible good nature made her an adept at creating artificial demands in response to an actual supply. In the pursuance of this end, she at once started on a voyage of discovery in Miss Bart's behalf. And as the result of her EXPLORAP 281 greater than tie-ins, she now summoned the latter with the announcement that she had found something. Left to herself, Jordy mused distressfully upon her friend's plight and her own inability to relieve it. It was clear to her that Lily, for the present, had no wish for the kind of help she could give. Miss Farish could see no hope for her friend, but in a life completely reorganized and detached from its old associations, whereas all Lily's energies were centered in the determined effort to hold fast to those associations, to keep herself visibly identified with them, as long as the illusion could be maintained. Pitiable as such an attitude seemed to Jerdy, she could not judge it as harshly as Selden, for instance, might have done. As he had not forgotten the night of emotion, when she and Lily had lain in each other's arms, and as he had seemed to feel her very heart's blood passing into her friend. The sacrifice as he had made it seemed unavailing enough. No trace remained in Lily of the subduing influences of that hour, but Jerdy's tenderness, disciplined by long years of contact with obscure and inarticulate suffering, could wait on its object with a silent forbearance which took no account of time. She could not, however, deny herself the solace of taking anxious counsel with Lawrence Selden, with whom, since his return from Europe, as he had renewed her old relation of cousinly confidence. Selden himself had never been aware of any change in their relation. He found Jerdy as he had left her, simple, undemanding and devoted, but with a quickened intelligence of the heart which he recognized without seeking to explain it. To Jerdy herself it would once have seemed impossible that she should ever again talk freely with him of Lily Bart, but what had passed in the secrecy of her own breast seemed to resolve itself, when the mist of the struggle cleared, into a breaking down of the bounds of self, a deflecting of the wasted personal emotion into the general current of human understanding. It was not till some 2 weeks after her visit from Lily that Jerdy had the opportunity of communicating her fears to Selden. The latter, having presented himself on a Sunday afternoon, had lingered on through the dowdy animation of his cousin's tea hour, conscious of something in her voice and eye which solicited a word apart, and as soon as the last visitor was gone Jerdy opened her case by asking how lately he had seen Miss Bart. Selden's perceptible pause gave her time for a slight stir of surprise. "I haven't seen her at all. I've perpetually missed seeing her since she came back." This unexpected admission made Jerdy pause too, and she was still hesitating on the brink of her subject, when he relieved her by adding, "I wanted to see her, but she seems to have been absorbed by the Gormer set since her return from Europe. That's all the more reason. She's been very unhappy."
"Unhappy at being with the Gormers?"
"Oh, I don't defend her intimacy with the Gormers, but that too is at an end now, I think. You know people have been very unkind since Bertha Dorset quarreled with her."
"Ah," Selden exclaimed, rising abruptly to walk to the window, where he remained with his eyes on the darkening street, while his cousin continued to explain, "Judy Treanor and her own family have deserted her too, and all because Bertha Dorset has said such horrible things. And she is very poor, you know. Mrs. Peniston cut her off with a small legacy, after giving her to understand that she was to have everything."
"Yes, I know," Selden assented curtly, turning back into the room, but only to stir about with restless steps in the circumscribed space between door and window. "Why, yes, she's been abominably treated. But it's unfortunately the precise thing that a man who wants to show his sympathy can't say to her." His words caused Jerdy a slight chill of disappointment.
"There would be other ways of showing your sympathy," she suggested.
Selden, with a slight laugh, sat down beside her on the little sofa which projected from the hearth.
"What are you thinking of, you incorrigible missionary?" he asked.
Jerdy's color rose, and her blush was for a moment her only answer. Then she made it more explicit by saying, "I am thinking of the fact that you and she used to be great friends, that she used to care immensely for what you thought of her, and that if she takes your staying away as a sign of what you think now, I can imagine it's adding a great deal to her unhappiness."
"My dear child, don't add to it still more, at least to your conception of it, by attributing to her all sorts of susceptibilities of your own."
Selden, for his life,
could not keep a note of dryness out of his voice, but he met Gertie's look of perplexity by saying more mildly, "But, though you immensely exaggerate the importance of anything I could do for Miss Bart, you can't exaggerate my readiness to do it, if you ask me to." He laid his hand for a moment on hers, and there passed between them, on the current of the rare contact, one of those exchanges of meaning which fill the hidden reservoirs of affection. Gertie had the feeling that he measured the cost of her request as plainly as she read the significance of his reply, and the sense of all that was suddenly clear between them made her next words easier to find. "I do ask you, then. I ask you, because she once told me that you had been a help to her, and because she needs help now as S.E. has never needed it before. You know how dependent S.E. has always been on ease and luxury, how S.E. has hated what was shabby and ugly and uncomfortable. She can't help it, she was brought up with those ideas, and has never been able to find her way out of them. But now all the things she cared for have been taken from her, and the people who taught her to care for them have abandoned her too. And it seems to me that, if someone could reach out a hand, and show her the other side, show her how much is left in life, and in herself," Gertie broke off, abashed at the sound of her own eloquence, and impeded by the difficulty of giving precise expression to her vague yearning for her friends. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.